This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Later in today's show, we'll look at programs to encourage employers to hire former offenders and give them a second chance. First up this afternoon, beginning with only 11 students and a staff of Three Sisters of Charity, a young priest, Father Henry Waldhaus, embarked on a mission which would produce the first accredited high school for the deaf in Ohio. This year, St. Rita School for the Deaf is celebrating its 100th anniversary. And joining us to share some history of the school and discuss its mission are St. Rita Executive Director Gregory Ernst. And you can join our conversation at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Greg, thanks for being here this afternoon.
Oh, thank you for inviting us.
Why did Father Waldhaus set out on that mission of founding St. Rita?
Well, there was a family in this city that was a Catholic family, and they had a child who was deaf, and they wanted that child to learn the Catholic faith. And so they went to the Archbishop at that time, and the Archbishop picked Father Waldhaus, who had not been ordained a priest yet. He was still a deacon. And so he started instructing the child, and then realized that there's more than one child that has a hearing loss that would need to learn. And so somehow, within a year or so, he convinced the bishop to buy about 235 acres out in the Evendale area. It wasn't Evendale at that time, but out in that area. I don't know how you convince a bishop to buy 235 acres, but he did.
And this was like farmland, wasn't it?
It was all farmland,
fertile
correct.
Farmland at the time. And then, so that had to be a pretty amazing vision to be able to see the possibilities for that land.
Amazing vision and the courage to do this, because he was studying to be a priest. He wasn't trained to be a farmer.
Right.
And so we have this farm, a working farm. So he had to depend on the local farmers for help. So when it was time to slaughter the pigs, he had to go down the road to the next farm and ask them to come out and help him do it.
And all the while they're building this school on this property and getting it ready, so he has to get ready for teaching these students who are coming in too.
That's correct.
Yeah. What was the exact date the school opened in 1915?
October 17th.
October. Oh, so that'll be the actual 100th birthday of
St.
Rita's, October 17th. Now, as the school was being built, Greg, Father Waldhaus and the Sisters of Charity, they were developing a plan for educating deaf students. And what were some of the things they were developing? What were some of the techniques they were coming up with to help these kids?
Well, what you were looking at is trying to figure out how the child can learn. So the sign language was definitely a vital part of that. So everybody had to pick up the signs, teach the child the signs, and then the auditory part of that. So picking up whatever equipment was available during that time to amplify the voice. So there was a music class, there was a speech class, you know, and then of course the other educational pieces. Now, in the beginning, as being a working farm, it wasn't all formal classrooms, so there would have only been one or two rooms that they used for classrooms. But as the culture changed and the farming became less and less and the schooling became more and more, then he gets the vision to go ahead and build this big building all the way around the property, and we have pictures of it. And so that he was going to have seven different sections connected by wings, and we didn't get seven now. We only have 2.5.
And before St. Rita, was there any other school that was providing an education for deaf students?
There were a few not in the area. There were a few in the country, but very few, because at that time, the culture was if you had a child with a challenge or a handicap, you didn't talk about it and kind of pushed them out of the educational system.
So this was really a progressive, forward-thinking thing that Father Waldhaus did.
Definitely.
How long did he run the school?
He ran the school into the 1960, somewhere in that area.
Wow, that long. And then who came after him?
After him was Father Paul Klenke, who ran it until he died, and then Father John Bach.
And then what did Father Klenke, what did he accomplish in his tenure?
He added the sports program in addition to keeping the quality educational there. He had the concept to try to have these kids do everything everybody else does in an educational system, not just sit in a classroom all day, but to go out and do some activities to keep them active.
And then Father John Bach, what were some of the things that he did? What was his legacy?
Well, during Father John Bach's time, we actually started to accept students on a day basis rather than being residential. Up until that time, everybody had to live there. So they were there all week long. They would go home on weekends. There would be some students because of distance that stayed on weekends. And then when Father John got there, they opened up the doors to allowing day students to come in.
And Father John was there till 1981, is that right? He came in 1981. And then he left in 90, and that's where
I come in, right.
So what's it been like for you running St. Rita's?
A very challenging job, but it's been fun. I enjoy what I'm doing. If I didn't enjoy it, I wouldn't be there. And you get to meet different people. You get to see the kids grow. Currently, we have infants up through grade 12, and you get to see that development. And then when the alumni come back, you get to see what they're doing, and knowing that the work that you were doing in the building during the last 20 years has been successful.
So you get a lot of satisfaction. Everybody else involved feels the same way, do they, Greg?
Majority of them do, yes.
Now, who is St. Rita? Who's the school named after?
St. Rita was a person who experienced the different lifestyles. She wanted to become a nun and was refused by an order. And so during that time, marriages were arranged. And so the family arranged for her to be married. So being a married woman, she had two children. But also during that time, there was a lot of feuds going on between the families. And so her husband was killed in one of those fights. And the two sons wanted to get revenge. And St. Rita, being a very religious person, didn't want that to happen. So she kind of prayed to have her two children not do that. Well, they died a natural death before they could do that. So then she's a widow. So mother, widow, single. And then she goes back and tries to get back into the religious order, and they denied her again. And so there were some situations which she tried to explain to them. And one of them was, and I believe this is correct, one of them was a rose growing in February. And the person she was talking to, the head of the religious order, this doesn't happen. She said, well, go look. And sure enough, there was a rose in February growing in the garden. And so they immediately brought her into the convent. And so you have four different aspects of that lady's life. And when they were trying to name the school, they were looking at the challenges that we have. And so one of her causes as a saint is Saint of the Impossible.
Okay.
And so
I thought maybe Saint of Overcoming Difficulties.
But that's close enough. Saint of the Impossible, Saint of Overcoming Difficulties. And so that's how they named the school. And, you know, her lifestyle was have different experiences in all those areas. So I think it's appropriate.
And St. Rita is part of the school is part of the Cincinnati Archdiocese, correct?
Correct. We're owned by the Archdiocese of Cincinnati.
Now, you started with 11 students 100 years ago. How much has the school grown over the years?
We will have about 180 students in the building when we start back up at the end of August. Now, there have been times when we had 190, 198, and that was due to the medical reason, the rubella syndrome back in the 80s. And so that the children being born there were actually born with a hearing loss. And so that was a big group that went through. But right now we're sitting at about 180.
And has St. Rita always been a coeducational school through its history?
Yes.
Now, are students referred to the school? What's the admissions process?
It can be a parent referral. It can be a referral through a school district. And so basically what has been occurring with my experience is that the parent is trying the educational systems around the area and finding that they're not working to their satisfaction, and so they're looking for a different option. Some situations could be the programs they're looking at do not know what to do with a child with a hearing loss, and so the parents look for somebody who can handle that.
Now, you mentioned athletics earlier. Is the athletic program still going these days, and how's that going?
Well, we're down to football, not football anymore, basketball and volleyball for the number of students that we're having. In the past, we had a football team, basketball team, baseball team, and some of the athletes went on to some of the college out in Washington, D.C. and played football out there. So it was fun coaching football. You Remember, they can't hear the whistle?
Mm-hmm.
And so you would tell the referees before the game that they cannot hear the whistle, so we should not see a flag for piling on after the whistle blows. Guess what?
That still happened. What are the school colors?
Today, they're green and gold.
Okay. Have they always been green and gold?
Yes. There's been a few. We rely on donations, and so one year there was a donation of blue uniforms, so we were blue that year. But the majority is green and gold.
Now, tell me about the services that St. Rita is offering to these students.
Well, we have an elementary program. We have a high school program. We have a residential program in those age groups.
Right, you're K through 12.
K through 12. But mm-hmm. we also have a program that we call LOFT, so Language Opportunities for Tots. And those are the infants through five-year-old. And in that group, you could have children that have a hearing loss. You could have children who have normal hearing. Or you could have children who have normal hearing but have no voice qualifications or expressions. And so those children are usually labeled with what's called apraxia. That's the latest medical term for them.
How is apraxia defined?
Basically, they can hear, as mm-hmm. you and I are hearing now, but if you ask them to try to repeat what they heard, they cannot do that. There's a processing problem. And so we try to use the one side of the brain, which is the visual side and not the auditory side, to see if we can get them to start expressing themselves.
How many students do you work with who have that?
Currently in that infant through grade 12, there's probably about 55 of them.
Wow. Okay. So you're spearheading what's called a reverse mainstream program, and that's what this is, correct?
That's what this is, yes. Yeah,
because you're involving students who can hear as well as students who can't hear.
Right.
Now, what is the curriculum like? Do you teach signing and lip reading as well as all the standard school curriculum?
Standard school curriculum, so we're accredited by the state of Ohio. So the high school diploma that the child gets is the same one everybody else is getting. We have to do the testing that the state of Ohio wants us to do. So we're going to have sign language classes for the children. We're going to be teaching them math, reading, and writing, et cetera. The lip reading is done with we have four speech therapists and an audiologist. So they might do that individually, but the experience on lip reading is it's 2/3 guessing.
But how is everyone on staff proficient with signing? And
the majority of staff have signs, yes.
We will continue our conversation about St. Rita's School for the Deaf, and you can join us by calling 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. My guest this afternoon, St. Rita's School for the Deaf Executive Director Gregory Ernst. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And St. Rita is marking 100 years this year. That's really amazing. That the program's been going that...
It makes you feel old, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's been around for quite some time. The festival is such a big thing that you do at St. Rita. When did that actually start?
If I read the history right, about 1916.
So right after the school
right
opened,
after the school opened, right. A visiting day, they came out. Actually, the beginning of the school, everybody, when the school was first founded, everybody was there 12 months working farm, so you really can't send anybody home. So the families came to visit. So it was everybody bring your own food, et cetera. And from that, they got the idea of trying to do some fundraisers together, make the food and sell it to not only the visiting families, but also the community.
And it's just kept getting bigger.
It's just kept getting bigger and bigger.
Bigger. How, right. How big is it today?
In some people's minds, it's too big. No, it's actually one of the largest in the area. There's over 100 booths. Plenty of rides, and the famous turtle soup.
Yes, the very famous turtle soup, which
very
is
famous
absolutely delicious.
Soup, of which I do not have the recipe. I'm sorry.
Okay. But it's a big part of your fundraising, isn't it?
Yes, it's important for us. It's our largest fundraiser. All the money coming from that festival goes into the operating. But it's also important because it puts us out there in the community. And I think that's very important to us, because without community support, the school would not be able to keep going.
How early can kids start to learn how to sign? That's such an important way to communicate with people who are hearing impaired. Is there a certain age where they start, and is there a certain age where they become proficient at it?
Actually, you can actually start signing before you're going to talk.
Really?
So we have some infants that are signing some very basic signs before they can say, like, cookie or milk or please or mom or dad or any of that. And so that's the reverse mainstreaming part that we talked about a little bit while ago, where the child who is hearing, normal hearing, will start signing before they will voice. And as long as you keep signing, they will continually improve their vocabulary, and so they're improving their signs, and they will keep using it because that's the environment they're in, because we have staff that are deaf that are signing, and our staff that are hearing are also signing. So you're in that signing environment, so the kids will pick that up.
How long does it usually take to become proficient in signing?
That's a good question.
As long as you have, right?
As long as you have, because they're constantly adding new signs, since you're adding new vocabulary. And I would say if you're going to be immersed in the system, probably a good 3 to 4 months.
Yeah. Do you offer classes for family members? Do you teach family members how to sign?
We offer classes for family members. We also offer them for the public.
Okay. How can somebody get more information about those classes?
That's probably on our website.
Okay. And you can find a link to that at WVXU.org. And let's talk with Karen in Delhi. Hi, Karen.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm doing well.
Okay. You're on.
Oh, I'm sorry. So so I'm listening to this program, and this is so fascinating to me. My aunt, who was born in 1913, I believe was in probably one of the first classes. Her family moved from St. Louis, which is why they came to Cincinnati. Well, then it all made sense. I hear that this was begun by the Sisters of Charity. Her sister was a Sister of Charity. This tells me about my background. Of course, none of them are here anymore, so I can't discuss it with them any further.
Okay, Karen, thank you.
Was the sister hearing or deaf?
The oldest sister, Aunt Maggie, she was deaf, but no, everybody else in the family was speaking, and none of us learned. Well, none of us in my generation ever learned how to sign, so that was very frustrating to her.
I'm sure it was. It actually isolates them in the family environment and in society, if they can't communicate because nobody else knows how to sign.
Do you often run across people like Karen who have some kind of a tie going back to St. Rita that's, you know, almost 80, 90, 100 years old, like that?
Yes. Actually, when we did some of our first 100th anniversary event was in January, and the two sisters of the first graduate, the dad, or actually the two sisters of the brother who was the first graduate, so they came out and started telling stories. You know, this is stuff we don't have in the archives, so you definitely want to talk to these people.
Yeah.
So I remember this, and I remember that, and I remember all kinds of neat things happen.
Really. Let's talk with Grace in Amberley Village. Hi, Grace.
Hi. My question is what the involvement of the sisters was, how long they were there, and what was their contribution, and can you name any of those that were there? Actually, I'm a Sister of Charity and very interested in the school, and there was quite a long history of the Sisters of Charity involvement there, but would like some details. Okay.
Thank you, Grace.
Sure. I can give you some of the history. I might be able to name a couple of them. If you can remember some of their names, I'm sure I've seen them before. The Sisters of Charity were selected because the Sisters of Charity were allowed to work with boys and girls. There was another sister organization that was only allowed to work with girls and not boys. And so when Father Waldhaus at that time was looking for help, Sisters of Charity volunteered to do that. I think during the history now, you're talking 1915, 16, and they were with us until close to 8 years ago. We still had Sisters of Charity active. Now, we still have two Sisters of Charity who are volunteering because they're retired. But there were over 118 Sisters of Charity throughout those 100 years. And I think that on one of the plaques, we have the number of years that they put in by adding in the number of hours a day, et cetera, was over 1,000. Without the Sisters of Charity, we would not be where we are today. So we really need to thank them. Every time I talk to Sister Charity, I thank them for being part of the order. They were teachers. And at that time, as a religious person, you worked for room and board, and they did.
Greg, tell me about the technology that St. Rita's using as to help its students and to teach its students.
Well, in the beginning, we would use a phonic ear system, FM system. So then hearing aids were in there, and also you have cochlear implants. Currently, we're using the technology that's available. So some of our children have cell phones because they can text back and forth. They use a video relay system for making phone calls, something in the way of Skype that you can do nowadays, which is live, so you can actually see the person signing. And then the cochlear implant is another part of that. So we have children with cochlear implants. We have children with hearing aids. We have children that bring their cell phones in. And then we try to take that visual, which was the sign language. That's how we're educating them. And to get that sign language into a written form, which people can then text back and forth.
How successful would you say St. Rita has been at helping these students?
Well, I'd have to say, I believe we are a quality program. And I believe our goal is to try to make the student as independent as possible when they get back out into the community. And for years, we were sending anywhere from 80 to 90% of our graduates into post-secondary education.
Wow, that's a good percentage.
That's a good percentage.
Yeah, it's a very good percentage. So 100 years, you just had the big festival. And what are some of the other events that you have coming up to celebrate St. Rita's 100th birthday?
Well, we actually had the kids put together a float, so we've been in a couple parades. We were in the opening day parade. We were in the St. Patrick's Day parade. We did, we're going to be in Harvest Home coming up here in September. But we've done an event almost every month. We actually ended up at the Florence Freedom ball game. We did the signing national anthem and did a lot of things at that one. And October 14th, we'll be on Fountain Square. It's lunch hour. So we'll have some videos of some of our parents. We have videos of some of our kids. We'll have our choir, which actually signs the songs. They won't sing them, of course, but they'll sign them. And then we'll have some other activities for the public to be able to find out things about us.
What do you think the future holds for St. Rita School for the Deaf?
Well, that's a good question. Everybody says, you're 100 years old, you're too old, you're ready to stop.
or what's going to happen in the next 100 years?
What's we don't know yet. We don't know yet. We can't foretell the future or predict it. But what I see occurring in the type of children coming in is we have children coming in that are not only having a hearing loss but having an additional challenge with it. And because I think our staff is flexible enough to at least try to work with these type of children and find information out in the community that they can put back into their teaching experience, which will help these children develop. And I believe that's going to continue. That's one of the trends that I see. And I think we're ready to meet that trend.
And how many certified or accredited schools for the deaf, like St. Rita, are there in Ohio and Kentucky and Indiana? Do you know?
How many are certified?
Accredited, yes.
And accredited. Each state has to have a program. So, for example, the state of Ohio has a program in Columbus. Kentucky has a program in Danville. Indiana has a program in Indianapolis. Those are all public programs. St. Rita's is the only one private that's Catholic, that has the full range of infant through grade 12 in the country.
Greg, thank you for joining us this afternoon.
You're welcome.
St. Rita Executive Director Gregory Ernst. And coming up after the break, we will talk about programs to encourage employers to hire former offenders and give them a second chance. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.